So the experimental design for these, basically, it's really simple, and this is fun basic research. We took walnut branches that weren't infested, and we placed them out behind our lab, and each day we went out to check if and when they got attacked. And if we ever saw a hole, then we would dissect it to determine what was in the hole. A great, easy experiment. And what we found was, and I'll go through, each time I'll show you my objective, the experimental design, and the results, so it's kind of a sequential thing like that. What we found was that the walnut twig beetles in California fly in the early evening between 6 and 9 p.m., and which is a horrible time because that's the worst time when you want to be sitting in the lab waiting to go check the traps. So what we noticed was is that at 6 when we left the lab, they weren't there, and the next morning they were. But eventually we did some evening stuff, and we were able to determine this is approximate time of flight. They found the logs that we had cut. This is kind of an unnatural situation, but they found the logs that we had cut about 4 days after they were placed outside. And just as an example, we had 15 galleries on 16 branches distributed throughout those 16 branches. And 9 of those galleries were initiated between 6 and 9 days. And then after that, it seemed like there were fewer and fewer attacks, probably because the material dried out. But what we did find is that in those galleries, 7 of those attacks were solely males. 0 of the attacks were females. And then we had 6 attacks that were 1 male and 1 female, and 2 attacks that were 1 male and 2 females. So it's very highly likely that the males colonize first, and then they're joined by at least 1 to 2 females. We never really left them out long enough to determine how many females they were joined by, but the males colonized first, which gave us more ideas for later studies. So for the field collections, basically we had Chuck climb up in trees and cut us branches that we then dissected to determine what were in those branches. And we had 20 centimeter lengths, and Shakib spent days and days and days under the microscope with a razor blade, slowly pulling the bark off to determine where the galleries occurred and who were in the galleries. And then I'll just show you a little bit about the results. What we found was on the y-axis here, this is the number of holes, primarily entrance holes, or likely entrance holes, and then the branch diameter is on the bottom in millimeters. And what we found was that basically the beetles attack the branches that are larger than 1.5 centimeters, and they'll go all the way up to as big as the tree gets. But primarily in the medium to small size branches is where we found them. But what was really interesting is when we looked where they were attacking, they primarily focused their attacks on the leaf scars. So on the left is a graph of the number of holes on a leaf scar versus the number of holes away from a leaf scar. And what we found was that they preferentially choose the leaf scar or something like a lenticel, just like what Whitney was saying, to go in. And I have some ideas about why that might be, but that can be for after the session. Okay, so that was the first part of our study, was just the basic biology. But our second one was, could we come up with some sort of attractant to actually monitor the beetles out in the field? Because I think it's important. You can't see these flying, you know. They just blow by as a speck of dust. So we wanted to determine which sex produces the aggregation pheromone, and our tip was from the colonization that the males go first. We wanted to determine how the density of that beetle would affect the production of the attractant. So more beetles equals more attractant or not. And then to determine if we have males and females either in close quarters, like is depicted here in this separate, or actually within the same logs, if we could determine how that affected the production of the attractant. So I think I have another experimental design for here to explain it a little better. So the basic experimental design for all these studies is that we took walnut branches and we placed them in these little fish bowls on their sides. And then we either left the branches by themselves or we added a certain number of males or females to the fishbowl container and let them naturally colonize the logs. And we put them in these cute little pop-up bug tents and put the logs in the bug tents, placed the bug tents outside on a stick, and then surrounded it with wire mesh that we had sprayed with the sprayable Tanglefoot. And then each day, I always joke with Steve that I would come out and I would point at the beetles, and then that would be it. But we would take the screens down every day, count the beetles, sex them for each treatment, and re-randomize. So our first treatment was basically we had 50 males And this is just a spur of the moment idea. Let's just put out whatever we can think of to do for experiments. So we put out 50 males in one, 50 females in another, the walnut branches alone, and just our trap. And what we found was overwhelmingly, both males and females were attracted to the logs that had males feeding in them. And neither males nor females were attracted to logs that had only females feeding in them. The walnut branches alone were not attractive, and of course our trap wasn't attractive. This is over 700 beetles that we caught in a week's time. And so we've determined that, at least based on this, that the males produce the attractant. So then we wanted to figure out, well, how many males in a log is too much enough or good enough? So this study had four treatments that basically had the branches again and then different levels of males, 20, 100, and 200, and the same experimental design as previously. And what we found was, as we increased the number of males in a log, it increased, though not statistically but numerically, increased the catch of females, but it really had no effect on the catch of the males. I'd like to redo this experiment to make sure if that's just an artifact of the population of the bark beetle at the time of year or something, but at least it shows a trend here at this point. So then I wanted to look at the interaction of the sexes. So we had the male and female alone treatment again, but then we had two different types of male-female treatments. One where the females were allowed to go into the logs and males were allowed to go in the logs, and we kept them separated within the bait. The other one was they were both allowed to attack the same set of logs, and then we called them mixed. And what we found here was that whether the beetles were separate or together, they attracted more sexes than either of the individual sexes alone, and that the addition of the females synergized the attractant or synergized the attraction for both sexes. So it's likely that males make part of the aggregation pheromone and females add a portion of it that increases the attraction to both sexes. So I'll just quick summarize here so that we can get to Ned and some questions. But what we found were that insects find freshly cut branches within about 4 to 9 days, and they prefer branches that are greater than 1.5 centimeters in diameter and anything much larger. What's interesting, if you're looking for them, they prefer leaf scars. And the male P. juglandis initiates the host colonization. So this is for the host selection summary. And then for the pheromone biology, what we know so far is that the males produce an attractive pheromone. And as you increase the colonization density of those males, it increases the attractiveness of infested branches to females. But that was not significant in that first study. Also, we found that the addition of females to male infested logs, it synergizes the attractiveness of those infested logs, so they probably have more than one component to their pheromone. And in late July and in September in California, those beetles fly in the early evening, so if you're looking for a time to trap them, that would be the time. So for our current and future studies, the stuff that we're working on and hope to work on is we'd like to identify what the specific compounds are that are involved in the aggregation behavior, because we want to figure out how we can monitor for this beetle. It would also be good to understand the diurnal and seasonal flight periodicity, which is sort of what you guys are already starting to figure out in Colorado, and then to develop repellent semiochemicals for use in management. I'm not sure what the possibility of spraying anything in Davis would be, so having something like a pheromone would be a really important aspect to a management program. So some of the target compounds, like Whitney mentioned, pitiol, and I'll mention grandisol, canopterin, and vitatol as some other possible target compounds that we're looking for. So with that, I'll say thank you and show you a picture of the beetle. So thank you. So Ned was asking if there's multiple generations per year. And I think that there's at least two generations per year, probably more than that here, because we had these surges of, we collected branches that had been attacked and we had surges of beetles coming out about two times. But remember, we've only been working on it really since this summer. So I would guess at least two to three. But I don't really know more than that.
Any other questions?
ballpark. Yeah, I would think so. I would think maybe even closer to 4 or 5 from what I've seen, but because I've only had experience with conifer Pityopteris, I don't know if that's... You definitely see 3 to 4 egg-laying galleries, but...
The galleries aren't as nicely maintained or the bark like they are in conifers when you dissect them. It's really difficult to see the pattern. You mentioned the target compounds. What's the logic behind... why do you think those are targets?
Well, okay, so we had talked about... Steve and I had talked about this, obviously, because we're in the same lab, but... some of these are based on studies with conifer beetles, that these are just attractive compounds. Pityol was identified as one of the first pheromones for Pityopteris. But also, like, when I was working up in Alaska, I was trying to target a repellent for an Ips bark beetle that turned out to be highly, highly attractive to 4, if not 5 species of Pityopteris. So it's likely that some of these compounds, they're angiosperm volatiles, or, you know, hardwood volatiles, and, you know, there's a possibility that they're attractive. Although our branch work doesn't show that there are volatiles that are attractive. So that's the rationale behind those.
Okay. One more question. You touched on, we talked a little bit about earlier, right? What's the likelihood that they preferentially go into leaf scars? What's their ability to attack trunks directly? Both as a target for size and perception and as an ability to go into the, I'm thinking the situation is rapid.
So the question was, since they attack the leaf scars, what's the likeliness that they would also attack large bark, or yeah, like the trunks, and particularly in grafting, like in orchards, I assume. You know, it's really hard to see these in large diameter stuff because, you know, but my guess is that the same situation would hold true because we do find them in larger diameter branches. So I would think that rough-barked, large-diameter walnut would be just as susceptible as a leaf scar.
Without setting up an infestation first, say, at the smaller diameter branches and moving down?
I'm not sure. I've not personally seen them just in large diameter and not in the branches. On smooth bark, I get the feeling like the fungus allows for an entry into cracks and crevices that are created by the cankers in larger diameter non-leaf scarred areas. That's my gut feeling. I don't know.
Let me ask that.
Okay, thanks, Andy.